This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
And as part of our podcast series, you're listening to Roseanne Murray, and I have with me in the studio today Janet Williams, who is a trustee of the Waikato Karamu Trust. Welcome, Janet.
Welcome.
Great to have you with us here in the studio today. We thought it would be a great opportunity to hear all about the Waikato Karamu Trust and the grant fund that you have available, which has opened on the 1st of June and closes on the 31st of July, which is coming up pretty quickly, actually. So to start us off, Janet, maybe if you just tell us a little bit about the trust, how it was established and how the fund came about, and then we'll get into a few more of the details around the actual funding.
The Waikato Karamu Trust actually started in 1994 from the sale of a property in Hamilton down Delthorpe Ave, and that was actually a 12-bed rest home, short stay rest home for people. So that was sold in 1993. 1994, the trust was formed as Waikato Women's Division of Federated Farmers Karamu Trust. We've since changed the name to Waikato Karamu Trust. We have money invested in managed funds with one of the two main companies in Hamilton here, or Waikato, that actually do managed funds. And they've looked after the money very well, and it has grown and grown since. Presently, there would be $1.5 million there, and we use the money, the proceeds from what is made each year through different shareholdings and investments, to give to the community. Like the last 4 years, we've given away $145,000 in grants. That changes every year, depending on what the share market's doing. It's not a guarantee that we've got, I think it was about $45,000 that we did last year. Can't guarantee it's $45,000 this year. It might be $50,000. It might only be $40,000. Who knows until we get the figures from them.
It's one of the challenges, isn't it? It's quite a volatile market out there at the moment, and with the economy, you know, sort of at a bit of a low, it does make it a little bit harder for our investments, isn't it? But just going back to what you said about, you know, when the rest home was sold off and someone had the foresight to set up the trust and to obviously invest the money and then to use the interest. Yes. And to being able to provide back to community. So great foresight by the Women's Division of Federated Farmers, as they were back in the day, which we were talking off air before, has now changed to the Rural Woman New Zealand, hasn't it?
Correct.
Yes, indeed. All right. So, so maybe if we just talk now about the actual grant fund itself, and I know that you know you're quite keen to open it up and ensure that more organisations across the greater Waikato region, I believe, have that opportunity to make an application.
True. If you live in the Waikato Regional Council area, you're open to apply. And, I mean, people don't realise how big those boundaries areas are. I mean, it's Bombay Hills, across to Port Waikato, and then down to the Kaimai Ranges, and to Mount Ruapehu in the south, and from Moku to the west coast across to the Coromandel Peninsula in the east, but doesn't bring in Tauranga.
Yeah.
So that's separate. But it's a massive area.
It is indeed, yes. So it's very similar to the boundaries that we work in ourselves here at Community Waikato. So it's great to see that, you know, groups that are based in the Thames Coromandel or, you know, you might be in the South Waikato Taupo District or in your Waitomo District are all eligible to apply. So maybe if we just talk a little bit more around the eligibility of who can and can't apply. Obviously, it's groups that you're not individuals can apply. It has to be a group. That's correct.
Yes, it is.
Yep. And do they have to be like I have a legal status, like an incorporated society or a charitable trust or anything like that?
If they are an incorporated society or a charitable trust, yes, that is great. If a charitable trust, we ask for the CC number.
Yep. And probably if you're in a corporate society, probably providing a copy of your certificate of incorporation, which most funders generally ask for a copy of. In saying that, I know you can just go onto the Incorporated Society's register online and check that out as well.
Certainly can. Yeah. And we do check some that they are who they say they are, yep. Especially if we've never heard of them. They could be a new group that's just started. But it's generally groups, organisations. And it's amazing just what community funding can actually do for people in the community.
So do you have a specific sort of kaupapa or, you know, sort of area of work for people, that what they can apply for, you know, sort of like, you know, what type of impact, I suppose, are you looking for? You know, I know you. I saw on your website that, you know, it's around, you know, that health, education, welfare space.
Definitely.
So, yep. Yes. So if you've got a project or a program that you're running that's has some sort of connection with health or education or welfare, that's the type of applications that you're looking for.
Definitely. And I can't name the organisations, obviously, for privacy reasons, but I can overview them as to, I mean, we get applications regularly from food banks.
Right, yes.
Which is growing more and more with the need of
indeed.
What's happening.
Yes.
We have community rest homes or community hospitals that apply, and we have provided funding towards these air mattresses that make it a lot easier for the patient laying in the bed. Health support groups for different health issues that people have. A lot of people are applying for travel because of the cost of fuel. Mm. Activities they do, and that could be a regular exercise class that they're doing. So people are actually getting connection with each other, and, you know, sometimes if they're living on their own, that's their only outing and connection with other people. And family support groups, there's lots of those that apply. Once again, activities and travel. Riding for disabled, you know, that connection with people, yep, with a horse. And children's health, we've had people for grief resources and wellbeing programs for people to cope. One interesting one that I like a lot, because I feel it really benefits everybody in the community, is road safety training, mm-hmm, which is young people getting driver's licence, because we're all safer on the road when you've actually got drivers that have got a driver's licence.
Most definitely. And I think going through those driving programs as well, rather than just having mum or dad teaching you bad habits, is really good. They teach a lot around defensive driving, don't
yes.
they?
Yes.
Yeah. 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 If you get caught in a situation, how to get yourself out of that, or what else to be very much alert and aware of when you are driving down the road.
Not everybody can afford to go to driving schools.
Yep.
So, you know, there are organisations out there that actually put it together for young people to do.
Yep.
And they've had some funding from somewhere to help them.
Yep.
And I can say Karamu has actually done that for some training organisations. Some people have had youth money for youth camps,
mm-hmm,
where they're learning, young people are learning new experiences, and refugee groups where we've had applications for people to actually have speech development, which has been really good. And that gives mentoring and connections, and the whole thing is about making the communities we live in a better place, and we're actually assisting people to do that, and right through from babies through to older people, because everybody has a need in one way or another for connection.
They do, and I think, you know, just picking up on what you're talking about before, especially around some of our older generations where they're living alone and just haven't got that family support around them, so lacking in that connection. And that's sort of one of the major concerns for our elderly these days, and for those that can't afford to go into retirement villages or rest homes or whatever it might be. So yeah, there's a few organisations out there that are definitely looking at providing that support to our elderly. And I know some of the transport shuttles, health shuttles and that, they go and pick them up and, bring them back to, maybe just a cup of tea or, just to catch up with different people. Or actually, the health shuttles are amazing, taking them to, doctor's appointments or hospital appointments where they don't have anyone else to be able to take them to.
That's true.
So it's great to hear that those organisations can apply for funding. It's great to see that you cover the whole age spectrum from our babies right through our youth and then through obviously to our elderly. And great to see that health advocacy groups, the support groups, I suppose you call them, because I know that they really struggle to get any government funding, and they do such a critical job out there.
They certainly do. And of course, not everybody who needs that help can actually get into Hamilton to get it.
Correct.
Or to a centre where they are, either in Waipa or Piako or Taupo or wherever.
Mm.
So often we're asked for travel money so people, the supporters can actually get to the people to do what they need to do.
Yep.
And to assist them. Another one that was interesting that we've done more than once is we've had applications for bus trips where they've actually picked up a whole lot of older people, mature people, and they've actually gone on a bus trip to, I think they went to Tauranga one year, a place some of them hadn't ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
Or hadn't had that outing for some time, but once again they got that connection and the outing that they wouldn't have got from sitting at home watching TV or listening to the radio.
Mm. I know the Western Community Centre in Hamilton, they have an over 50s group, and I think once a month or once every couple of months they do a bus trip and they go to somewhere quite different, for these groups. And it is, it's great to see that there are opportunities out there to support our elderly in that space. And as you say, travel at the moment with the cost of petrol or diesel, quite horrendous. I think it's slowly coming down, but it's going to take a while to get back to what it was, if at all. So it's good to see that there's a potential to apply for some travel monies, to help with cover these petrol costs.
It is, because everybody needs someone. And when people need that support, people need to be able to get to those people. And of course, they can be very rural areas, but those people are just as important as the people living in the city.
That's right. So what I'm hearing is it's any club, organisation, group that's across the greater Waikato Regional Council boundary can look to make an application. And especially if you're focusing in that health, education or welfare space, all age groups, I'm hearing. So
yes.
It's quite broad, which is great to hear. So maybe if you just tell us a little bit about how the application process works, what's the detail behind all that? I know I mentioned earlier that obviously applications did open on the 1st of June and close on the 31st of July. How does someone go about making an application?
If they go to our website, which is Waikato Karamu Trust, there's a link there to push for an application form, and you do need to print it off and fill it in. Next year you'll be able to go onto it and actually fill it in online, which does make it easier for people, but we're not quite there yet. We will be for next year. So print it off, fill it in, attach all the things that you need to attach, and we do need a set of an annual set of accounts to actually see that you have been there for 12 months or more. And if you've got any things that actually are going to be very expensive and you've got money in the bank, tell us it's tagged. you know, it could be tagged for a new roof or some maintenance projects that you've got, and then we can see, well, actually, this big healthy bank account isn't so healthy because it's tagged for this major project that they've got. So there's up to $5,000 is what you can apply for. We actually make the closes on the 31st of July. We make our decisions, and then you're notified in October, and the funding is actually paid before the end of October.
Right, and you've made a really good point there around the if you've got any accumulated funds, you know, sitting there showing up on your balance sheet. Some organisations, have been a little bit worried about, oh, you know, we've got some funding set aside. You know, will we actually get, you know, these applications approved? And, you know, as you say, it's just a matter of tagging them, that, you know, if you've got a specific purpose for why you have got those tagged, you know, might be around needing a new roof on your building, or you need to do some extensions. Obviously, it's very prudent to make sure you've got at least 25% to 50% of your operating costs, you know, sort of set aside in case, case for a rainy day where, you know, you've got maybe some funding hasn't come through that you had been hoping for. So you've still got some funding there that you can make sure you can cover all your costs, and especially if you employ any people, to make sure that you can keep paying their wages. Very important, isn't it? Or else you might have a major event coming up, say, next year, which, you know, quite a lot of your funding has been set aside for. So it's just a matter of, you know, putting that into some notes at the bottom of your balance sheet, isn't it? That's what it's been tagged for.
Correct.
Yeah.
One thing that we don't fund is wages. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are some funding organisations that do wages, not many. And I'm afraid Kiramu's not one of those mm-hmm. that does give money towards wages or capital expenses. They're generally.
Yep. So if you are needing to replace the building, the roof on the building, you won't be able to utilise the funds for that. Fair enough. Are there any other anything else that you won't cover funding for?
Professional sports.
Right.
That's another one.
Yep.
But sporting groups. You know, there may be a team of sports team that are wanting to do something. We certainly look at that too.
Okay, that's good. And obviously, if you're not based in the Waikato Regional Council area, save you actually putting your application in. I would say, like everyone else, if you've already had your events already been held or expenses have already been, you know, paid out for, you can't get anything retrospective, can you? And that's very much the same for all funders out there. So it has to be something that's going to be happening in advance. I would presume you also would need to look at providing a copy of a budget on
the project. Yes.
And that where your funds are going to be going towards helping. Towards
Correct.
That project, so that's always vitally important with all funding applications is to provide a budget. And I think for people out there too to understand is that, you know, like the project might be like, let's say, $20,000 worth, and it's actually okay to apply to the Waikato Karamu Trust for up to $5,000, I'm hearing, and then potentially go to another couple of funders to look at some other funding to support. You know, hopefully you would have a little bit of funding yourselves to put into it, but that is actually okay to do that.
It is okay. We do ask, have you approached other funders? But as you say, if it's a $20,000 project and we're only doing up to $5,000, they haven't got the $15,000, they're going to need to go to others.
They are.
Because the longer they wait for this project or miss that opportunity for that project because of the funding.
Yep, that is true too. All right. And I did note on your website too that the Karamu Trust is actually not registered for GST.
No, we're not.
No, so any amounts requested are all to be exclusive of GST. So,
yes.
And that's all included in the information on the application form. So as Janet was saying before, at the moment you still need to go onto the website and download the application form, print it out, and fill it in. And then whereabouts do they send the application form to, Janet?
There's an email address there for you to send it to, or you can post or drop it off at Barrowcroft.
Barrowcroft and Associates Chartered Accountants.
That's correct.
Here in Hamilton. Yep. So
King Street, I believe.
Yep. And their contact details and the email address, which is fiesta4young@hotmail.com. So that's FIESTA, the number 4, young@hotmail.com is the email address. And all of those details are on the website and within the application pack for those organisations that are interested in maybe making an application to the Waikato Karamu Trust.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And our trustees, we have 9 trustees, mm-hmm. and a real mixture of people in those trustees. Some are they're actually grassroots people who live in town, and there are some that live out of town, you know, being rural.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an accountant. And we have a lawyer, and we our chair at the moment was one of the original trustees that started the trust in 1994, and that's David Naske, and he has said I can use his name.
All right.
So he's quite well known in the rural sector, and he's presently chair of the Cambridge Business Chamber. So he's got a wealth of knowledge in the rural sector because he's been involved with Field Days and Federated Farmers as well. So, yeah, it's across the board. It's not just for town people. It's for rural people as well.
Because obviously it was originally set up through the Women's Division of Federated Farmers, which obviously has quite a rural focus, doesn't it? And now obviously known as Rural Woman New Zealand. So there's probably not an overly emphasis on rural groups, but obviously you very much encourage rural groups to make an application to the trust.
Definitely, and quite often, some of these health support groups, they're actually based in a city, you know, like Hamilton, and they have branches and they have supporters or support workers mm-hmm. who actually go out to wherever it is where the people need it.
Yep.
So, you know, one other thing that can happen too, like you could have a girl guide group, for instance, and I'm not saying we have had a girl guide group, but mm-hmm. I'm using that as an example. A lot of these smaller groups, their funding is actually controlled by New Zealand Girl Guide Group.
Mm, the national bodies.
The national bodies.
Yep.
So when you actually ask for their accounts, the local ones don't have any, because they may take a small fee, which is basically for their petty cash, but their main funding comes out of the national body.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ask for something from the national body to actually show that there is some funding support behind there for that organisation to continue. Could be Boy Scouts. It could be group.
And that's quite common.
Very common.
There's a lot of different, you know, groups that have a national body organisation where maybe the branches are so small themselves and purely voluntary that all the extra red tape, I suppose, by having to, you know, be your own, like, incorporate society and having to do your own annual accounts is a lot of work. And so that's where some of the national bodies actually take over all of those duties on behalf of those local branches.
They do. They make it easy because they still want these branches to actually keep going for the community to survive.
Yeah, and it's all about, I just picked up on you were saying about, you know, it might not be that the people can get to you, so it might be that some groups actually, they'll take their services to the people.
Definitely.
And especially those that, can't drive or don't have transport, or the fact that transport is so expensive for them.
And no public transport.
No, not in some of our sort of rural areas. So again, that's where a big plug to all of the various health and community transport shuttles out there, all the amazing work that they do, and most of them are volunteers as well. I was, as an aside, I was up at the outpatients clinic at the Waikato Hospital yesterday with my mum, and there was a couple of health shuttle drivers came in and they just had their shirts on, so you could tell. And they were just, yeah, must have been taking a bit of time up their sleeve, so they were just quickly grabbing a coffee and something to eat. And I was driving out and I said to my mum, I think that's something that I'd like to do when I retire, is, you know, is to give back and, you know, volunteer to help drive people around, you know, to get them from A to B. I'm so used to doing it with my mum, so, you know, I suppose it's just a continuation of that. But they do play such a massive part in supporting our communities out there.
Oh, where would we be without volunteers?
That's true, and very timely. We've just recently had National Volunteer, or even International Volunteer Week. And, yeah, our volunteer numbers are shrinking a little bit. Mm. I know we're all very busy out there, but I keep thinking back to when my parents were always volunteering, but they were always busy too. But it's amazing how they found time for it. So yeah, if anything out there for those that have not volunteered before, it can be an amazing experience being able to give back and to see other people so much appreciating the support that you're able to provide them.
Oh yes.
And yes. You, Janet, a great example of that. You know, you're volunteering your time here as a trustee of the Waikato Karamu Trust, and when we were off here you were talking about a few other organisations that you're somehow got yourself tied up with as a volunteer. They always say if you want someone to do something, ask a busy person, because they'll somehow fit that into their schedule.
They do.
And that sounds a little bit like you. We've actually not got very long to go, so probably just are there any other key messages, if you want, there's anything there that you want to repeat, maybe just the website address again would be good for our listeners to hear.
Waikato Karamu Trust, and Karamu is K-A-R-A-M-U.
Right, so Trust. The Waikato Karamu Trust. Go online and you'll be able to see where the application is and click on that and, as you've said, print it out. Only up until the end of this year, and that by this time next year you'll have an online process, which will be fantastic for people just to apply online.
We only do the funding once a year.
Yes, so one round.
Round of funding, mm-hmm. And that's it for the year.
Yep.
So if you can't quite do it this year, you haven't got your project organised, think about it for next year, and we will have an online then, and totally online, where people can actually fill it in, push submit, and if it won't submit, you've missed something out. So whereas when you print it out yourself, it's easy to miss something, but we have put a checklist on the form to make sure that people have actually given us what we need. And yeah, please apply. We need to have a wider
breadth of applications.
Totally, and come from a wider area, you know, mm-hmm. looking at the full Waikato Regional Council area.
All right, well, that's a good challenge out there, I think, to a lot of our community organisations that haven't previously applied to the Waikato Karamu Trust to get in and do that. Applications close on the 31st of July, so you've got a couple more weeks to be able to get your application in, and hopefully you might be successful in hearing back from them before or by October at the end of this year, and if not, get yourself ready for next year. That's all the time we've got for today, so look, thank you very, very much, Janet, for coming in and telling us all about the Waikato Karamu Trust Fund.
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.